gold star there. Okay, so we're going to pick back up in chapter 3 where we left off. We're going to try to get close to the end here, and then we'll just have one more chapter with me before we pass it back to Mason to finish up Lamentations, and then we're going to have some practical review of Lamentations towards the end of this class. So, just kind of catch you back up. Remember, in the first part of chapter 3, it kind of gets lower and lower and lower. His spirit is going down, 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 and it just bottoms out. It's as low as, you know, things get, and then we make that turn. That's what we talked about at the very end of class. We make that turn in verse 21. Okay, so let's read verse 21 again in chapter 3. Actually, I'm going to back up just a little bit, verse 19, to kind of build up to it. Remember my affliction and my wanderings, the wormwood and the gall. My soul continually remembers it and is bowed down within me. But this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. You know, so despite everything, the writer still has this hope. He says, but this I call to mind. You know, this being what he's about to say, you know, therefore I have hope. So this comes right after the lowest point. This transition is made. And I ask this question, this thought question number one in lesson 8. What do you think caused this transition? Like, why would he say this at his lowest point?
Maybe because it's his lowest point.
Right. Yeah. What else can you say?
There's nowhere else to go.
Exactly. Nowhere else to go at that point. You know, it's like we've already noted, there's nowhere to go but up. And if you're drowning, I mean, you'll grab anything there to try to stop from that. And here, the writer, he recalls the only thing that's there, and the only thing that's always been there, which is God.
There's also this, tradition or formula, whatever you want to call it, in the Psalms of Lament, where the psalmist at some point realizes, I'm trying to look inside myself for the answers, and wait a second, the answers aren't there, right? And so far, if you want to view the whole book as one continuous thought process, which maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but so far he has been looking around him at all the terrible things that have happened. But now he starts to kind of just focus in, which we all have a tendency to do.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, my soul remembers the affliction and wandering, but it's bowed down within me. And then he says, well, wait a second. That's not where the answers are. Yeah. So that's what he... And the Psalms do this too. They say, no. I don't look inside myself. I go to the house of the Lord, and then I remember the end of the week.
Yeah.
And I think that's what he does here.
Yeah. You know, remember our visual where I went and squatted down in the back, you know, and there's all this stuff in our way. Here's God up here, and now suddenly things have kind of cleared out a little bit. He has nothing left. There's nothing else for him to focus on other than God. All that stuff's completely gone. Just think of this kind of empty, silent, white room. You've probably seen it on TV somewhere. There's just literally nothing, no sensory input at all. He's now got this kind of laser focus on God, and that's where his attention's clearly gone. So let's read verse 22 to 33. Okay. 22 to 33. The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. The Lord is my portion, says my soul. Therefore I will hope in him. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. Let him sit alone in silence when it is laid on him. Let him put his mouth in the dust. There may yet be hope. Let him give his cheek to the one who strikes, and let him be filled with insults. For the Lord will not cast off forever. But though he cause grief, he will have compassion according to the abundance of his steadfast love. For he does not afflict from his heart or grieve the children of men. Yeah, so this is where we want our minds to end up, in the midst of this despair, right? You know, if we never actually make it back here to what Jeremiah just said, that's the tragedy. Not the original tragedy, which is bad. It's if you never make it back to understand this, that's the tragedy. How do we do that if we don't build this understanding and this relationship with him all of the rest of the time. You know, we don't go through these horrible things just nonstop, you know, your entire life. You know, these are the things that need to be written on our heart, so it's there when we need it most. And I was especially intrigued in this section by the things that Jeremiah says are good to do, starting in verse 25. And this was thought question number two in your lesson 8. So think about why these things are good. All right, we're going to talk about that in just a second. Why are these things good? Starting in verse 25. The Lord is good to those who wait for Him, to the soul who seeks Him. It is good that one should wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. Let him sit alone in silence when it is laid on him. Let him put his mouth in the dust. There may yet be hope. Let him give his cheek to the one who strikes, and let him be filled with insults. So what about some of these things are good? What did y'all come up with for that?
Well, in 27, it says it's good for the man to bear the yoke in his youth. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's how you gain wisdom.
Right. Yeah, you gain it. You want to gain it at that point, right? You don't want to learn that at 90 years old and apply it for 2 years, you know, or whatever. You want to learn it when you're 20, 25, and be able to apply that your entire life. That's a great point. I also thought about in your, well, go ahead, Jack.
Well, to that point, I was going to ask, and I looked it up, and I don't know if I really understand. What yoke are they talking about?
I don't know if it's specific, if it's specifying any one yoke. I think it's more, the way that I interpreted it was the yoke in his youth is really just kind of like a broad term of like you need to bear these types of things like when you're able and when you're young and pass through those things so that, you know, when you get to here, you'll be okay with it. But if somebody has a different opinion on that, go ahead.
Okay, speaking about the yoke, I just remember the scripture that says, learn from me. The Lord said, learn from me, and I'm humble. Accept the yoke, because he's lighter.
Right.
So what I understand is that he's good for us, for the youth, learn to walk in the ways of the road. It's his job. But something else that I want to say is that it's good to those who wait for him. I think wait is something is an element that we need to learn wait from the Lord, because it shows confidence that he's working on the situation, and his justice, his everything is going to do according to his will. So we have to wait on the Lord.
Right, and we've had to learn that, right? I mean, they're learning this in the Old Testament, and you go all the way back. It's like, you know something's supposed to happen, or you think that anyway, and you kind of need that proof that waiting does pay off, and they start getting that. They start realizing, like, you know, if we do wait, we do get what God has said to us, and, like, the longer we see this and see the fruits of that, our children are going through the same thing. They're 2 years old. They don't understand that. I say, hey, just wait a few minutes, and that will work itself out. They don't understand that until it works itself out in a few minutes. And then the next time, maybe they can wait a few minutes, you know, to let it go. It takes a little while to build up that patience, but you're right. We need to learn that patience. You know, there was one other thing I wanted to say about the bearing the yoke in your youth is, like, isn't that when you're more, like, I don't know, able, a little more strength of mind, you haven't been worn down over time? You know, maybe even physically you're able to handle it a little bit better.
Fewer other things that it's a lot easier to suffer if you don't have a family or...
Exactly. Yeah, that sort of thing. I was thinking, so our kids are doing swim lessons right now. And we sit, you know, we're in this huge room at the pool or whatever. We're on the opposite side kind of watching this teacher, you know, with the kids. And Charlie, man, he's just so... He like debates everything. They'll be like, hey, why don't you try this? And he's like, ah, what if I do it this way? And we can like see them kind of debating on the other side. And I'm sitting there, I'm just getting worn out by it. I'm like, man, just do it, Charlie, come on. But they're with these really young instructors who just have eternal patience with them. And they're not, you know, worn down the way that I am. I'm like, Charlie, get in the pool. What are you doing? But they just deal with it. And I think about, like, that youth. You know, they haven't gone through that 10,000 times yet to where they're just like, I've had it with these kids. And, you know, isn't it great to learn those lessons and go through that and bear the yoke, you know, in your youth?
I wonder, is another way of looking at that. When you're young, when you're going through things, hopefully, you're more malleable, willing to change. When you get older, you get stuck in your ways about things, and you refuse to change, even though it's good. So maybe that has something to do with it, that in this way here, because you're preparing for the things that's coming down the line. I mean, this is life. It's difficult in all its different ways. So if you learn how to navigate it now, in the proper way to do it, when you get older, you do that. But you know, you get there, and if I've been navigating life this certain way all this time, and now I have to do that, it's harder, not impossible, but it's definitely harder to do.
Yeah, either, you know, what you've been doing all this time, it just kind of works. So like, why would I change it? Or I've changed so many times, and I know what a burden it is, how hard it is. Oh, I don't want to do that again. You know, like, the experience is good in some ways, and sometimes it hurts you in others. You know, I was also thinking about verse 25, we were talking about waiting on the Lord. You know, waiting means you trust Him. He said He would do it, and I believe that. Seeking Him means you believe that He has the answers, you know, which is also trust. I think that verse 25, it's basically saying it's good to have a trusting relationship with God. That's what we should have.
I'm waiting quietly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really hard one, right?
But it makes you focus.
Yeah. What's that one? Verse 26. Yeah, wait quietly. You know, this one reminded me of Jesus when He says, you know, you believe because you have seen Me. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. This idea, this is kind of like, if you keep asking Me, that's fine. You know, waiting not quietly, that's fine. But blessed are those who don't keep asking, but wait quietly. You know, with faith, because I've said it, and I said it would happen, and you wait quietly for that.
And that was part of that. Wait, especially after God has probably said or spoken on something, and we want to still. I was thinking about Habakkuk and the conversation that he had, and what he's seeing what's going on, and then God tells him what's going on, and he said, "This doesn't really fit what I think should happen." Yeah. At the end of it, he said, "I'm going to wait. Yeah. I'm going to be quiet and wait because the Lord has already declared what He's going to do." And it really doesn't matter how it's going to be. I'm going to, that's the trusting part and everything else. This is going to be pretty bad, but I'm going to wait, sit here quietly because God knows what He's doing, and this He's declared it already, so I'm not going to debate and say either hurry something up or part of the silence is probably just reflecting too. Sitting there thinking about what is the Lord has. What is He already declared, or specifically, if it's something that I've done that has brought this on me, make me think about those things and the consequences that I'm receiving. I think that's a little bit later on, and say, and you know, not fussing at God about it, but let that be a learning moment for me about the things that I'm going through.
Right. And, you know, waiting, it does not come intuitively. You know, we have to be told this. This is what you need to do. You need to wait, you know, because otherwise I'm never going to think to do that myself.
In verse 28, he also talks about staying aware and keeping silent. And I think that's something we just don't do in today. You know, even our prayers are hurried and rushed. Okay, Lord, thank You for this, blah, 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 and let's amen. Instead of taking the time and spending time just being in His presence with You. And thinking, like we said, you know, all the stuff that we talked about is being more, taking time to really be with Him. Jesus did that. I mean, He, several times it talks about Him going off alone by Himself. And how often do we do that today?
Right.
Take time just to be with God.
Yeah, it's a good point. I wish I would do more of that. And, you know, given these types of verses, they kind of help lead your mind that way. I thought of 28 through 30. If you kind of put those all together, it seems to draw this picture of just a quiet, humble, quiet, humble, prostrate meekness. You know, kind of, if the Lord allows you to live through these trials, just take it. You know, you need to learn something about this. Go ahead.
If you've been in one of Marty's classes, he'll say that's a good question. Because, I mean, you know, like, there is no, like, oh, it's very clear to me, this is what you do, step one, two, three, and like, that's how you balance those things. But I think all of that goes into, you know, why are you saying what you're saying? What are you saying? When? How often? Like, what drives it from inside? I think that's where that balance is struck. You can say something every day. That's waiting quietly if it comes with this humble spirit, I think. But, I mean, if you're just angry about it all the time, or, you know, I don't know, I can't give, you know, really good examples about it, but you probably feel that within and can't be told, this is what, where you cross the line. I can't tell you that, but I think it comes from within. Does anybody have anything to expand on that? Maybe make it sound a little
Well, look, I mean, in verse 25, the parallel to wait for him is seeks him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if we, I think it's a mistake to think of waiting as a completely passive, completely,
right.
I'm just going to stand here until something happens, you know.
Yeah.
It's, and, you know, maybe it's a little bit of word association, but the person who seeks him, I think of Jesus saying, ask, seek, knock, right? Those are very active things,
right?
Petitioning for the things that we need. And which is really what the whole book of Lamentations is, right? It's a petition for God to keep his promises and to rescue the people who are in distress. It's waiting patiently, but with a lot of prayer, and it's a very active waiting.
Right. That's a great point. I think he answered a lot better than I could there, but you know, well, go ahead, Danny. Did you have something you want to add? Okay. So, you know, that section, 28 through 30, I like the picture it paints of what a person is like. You know, but, you know, I said, if he lets you live through this, just kind of take it. You need to just absorb this, because verse 31, for the Lord will not cast off forever, but though he cause grief, he will have compassion, according to the abundance of his steadfast love, for he does not afflict from his heart or grieve the children of men. You know, look at what the lamenter here is calling to mind. You know, God is good. I could handle this. Better things are coming. You know, I'm suffering, but I remember these things. And hopefully we can do that too. You know, I think anytime I see these things where these are hard things to do, right? This list that we just gave, the things that are good, they're hard. But we need to do hard things. I mean, that's what shapes us. And this is not the way that I operate in life usually. It's usually, oh, that's really, really hard. I need to scale that back some. I need to make it easier. Or if I see something that's going to be too hard for my kids or friends or, you know, people at work or whatever, scale it back some. But sometimes that's not the best thing. It's to do the hard things and get what comes from that. All right? So when I see things, I'm like, I don't know if I can do that. That's probably where I need to say, I should probably find a way to do that and do the best I can with it. And of course, the Bible is full of things like that. All right, let's read 34 to 39. Okay. To crush underfoot all the prisoners of the earth, to deny a man justice in the presence of the Most High, to subvert a man in his lawsuit. The Lord does not approve. Who has spoken and it came to pass unless the Lord has commanded it? Is it not from the mouth of the Most High that good and bad come? Why should a living man complain, a man, about the punishment of his sins? So, you know, you probably noticed some of these rhetorical questions in here. We had the question in the lesson, you know, what purpose do these rhetorical questions serve? Well, what did y'all come up with that? What are some of the purposes of these questions?
Well,
Bible says knowledge is truth. Mm-hmm. God's a command.
Exactly.
He's going to do according to the order he set down.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a reminder of who's ultimately in control. And wait a minute, you know, I read this. This sure looks a lot like Job 38, right? Where he starts answering. You know, I want to read some of this. Who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? You know, dress for action like a man. I will question you. You make it known to me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? And you get this full picture here. I mean, it goes on and on in that chapter. But, you know, is this not an example of learning from maybe a past lament? You know, as a prophet of God, Jeremiah here, could you write what he just did here in these few verses and not recall God's answer to Job? You know, if you've spent any time reading that, I hope we can do the same. I hope these things pop into our mind, you know, when we see some of the stuff. That's one of the reasons why we want to use, you know, the language of a lament. You know, something that's been used many other places. And we've seen that. All these Lamentations, they have a lot of components that are similar. And we brought out, I think, in the last class, Job, the Psalms, you know, like clear places where the same type of language is being used. All of us in here have experienced despair in some form, you know, over our life. This class is hard because we can't really address those very specific things head on. You know, we kind of speak more generally. We apply these principles, but you're thinking about them in your head. You know, but part of this class, it's a plea that we all try to be prepared for when that despair comes, when these days come, when there's something to lament. You know, it's a plea to reframe your thoughts, perhaps, of a past lament, but certainly to try to lay that foundation of God as the answer and as the only one that we should turn to in these times. So that was the end of chapter 8, of lesson 8. So let's review our objectives real quick. We wanted to identify common lament language shared between Lamentations and other Bible books. This is what we just talked about. Remember, I cry for help. I'm the laughing stock. He has walled me up. These are all terms that are used multiple times. Identify one of the core natural results of lamentation, remembrance of God. You know, that's something that's going to come, you know, I think naturally over the course of, if you play it out the way that we have here, just really explore every part of it. And then list three things that are, quote, good for a man. I just found this list very interesting. There's more than three, but wait quietly, bear the yoke, sit alone in silence. This one, put mouth in the dust, I just thought of that as just, you know, prostrate yourself, humble yourself before God, and then give your cheek to the one who strikes. The whole, you know, turn your cheek to the other, let him strike that too.
Or accepting discipline. It's probably more accepting discipline.
Right.
Those were valuable.
Yeah, exactly. Knowledge. Yeah, accepting discipline, very good.
So, sorry, I just want, there's one more kind of structural thing here. Mm-hmm. We usually focus on, you know, verse 22, maybe 23 as like, that's the heart of the book, that makes everything okay. Maybe it does, I don't know. But I think verses 21 really through 39 structurally are the center of the book. But from here, it's going to get really dark again. In fact, I think the second half of the book is even darker than the first half of the book. And so the question would be, if this is the center, then it ought to inform what comes after it. How does having this in our minds change what we read in the second half of the book?
Yeah.
Does it? But anyway, something to think about as we move forward.
Yeah, it's a good question, because to your point, when we start chapter 4, it's going to get real ugly again real quick. And we're not quite there yet, because I think the back half of chapter 3 has a lot more of kind of hopeful type things that we want to talk about. So, good. Let's think about that as we go through the last couple of chapters. We're moving into lesson 9. This is the rest of chapter 3, verse 40 to 66. How are we doing on time? Okay. Here's where we are, moving along nicely. You've got one more with me, and then Mason's going to close us out here. Okay, this is the group question. I like to start off with some kind of question to get everybody's minds going. So what types of events cause us to make changes in our lives? Kind of back up from the book a little bit. I always try to think generically of whatever you can. What types of events cause us to make changes in our lives?
Illness.
Illness. good. Something changes, you're going to have to live your life differently going forward, or move, or something else. Aaron?
Horrific events like 9/11.
Exactly, yeah, like tragedies. Something where, something that affects you, you know, internally. If you were part of 9/11, death, change of job, you know, whatever else, moving.
Okay. Relationships, so you have marriage, children.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you can kind of think of the posts of your marriage, of where things have pivoted, you know, once you got married, once you had kids, once the kids moved out, you know, whatever. These are big changes in your life. What else?
Or when you hit rock bottom.
Right.
Nowhere else to go.
Right. Because you kind of have to make changes. You can't keep living like that, right? You know, not for very long. So something that forces that change. I had several examples here. I thought, argument with a spouse. All right, you have realized, somebody's going to realize an error, hopefully, in this argument, and that's hopefully going to cause change. You know, something needs to change a little bit. So anytime that we disagree and voice our disagreement and come up with a solution, that's something that causes change in our lives. Difficulty with children. They're going the wrong way. We need to pivot. We need to change somehow. This is kind of a small example, but on our way home from church when the kids were 1 and 2, man, they were miserable drives home. Like, kids screaming, it's like 30 minutes, we get stuck in traffic, you know, which is so annoying, being in traffic at night for whatever reason. Over time we were like, we've got to change something because, like, I'm so frustrated. Like, coming to Wednesday night service was worse, you know, than not coming, you know, tonight, because of this drive home is just killing us. Make a change. Do something. Like, we rearranged seats. We started bringing stuff in the van. We started having talks with them before. Make a change. You know, my parents were divorced when I was in college. That is a big change. Everything shifts, you know, like the way we visit, the way we talk or don't talk, you know. I think of that as, you know, other people's tragedies affect you and cause change. Of course, death, you know, anytime someone dies, you know, I think of death in kind of both ways, not just people dying, but like parts of your life dying, moving away, and those cause changes. You know, me and Paige have talked several times about how the older we get, the less excited we get about things or whatever. Like, I'll never recapture the moment that I don't know how old I was, 7, 8, walked in and saw a Major League Baseball stadium for the first time. It was amazing. I was so excited. There is not a place on earth that you could take me now that I could feel that same excitement. Like, over time, I've seen enough death. I've seen enough horrible things happen that, like, something gets damped down inside, I think, over time. And, like, I just don't feel that. Kind of, that's why I think I mentioned up in the announcements not too long ago, I cry every time somebody's baptized. It's like the one thing left that still just really gets me. And I love that. I like to feel that, you know, at that time. So, you know, things change over time. There are events that cause that. You've seen one too many bad things and things start changing. Pivot points happen. And I think that any situation that is the basis of a lament is probably one of those points that change occurs. So what do we do in those situations? That's what the back half of chapter 3 is about. Okay, so let's lead up to it real quick. We have our goals. Jack already covered the bottom one, to weep with those who weep. Going up from there, learn to express our sorrows, especially spiritual, in productive ways. We want to increase our faith in God's sovereignty, righteousness, and compassion. And, of course, we're trying to understand this actual book of Lamentations a little bit better. For this class, we want to identify one of our main responsibilities when lamenting. We want to list two things that happen when we call on God. These are two great things that happen. And then describe this kind of paradoxical relationship between judgment and hope, which is what we see here. Component matching. So we see just about everything in this back part, which is pretty amazing, right? In just 20, whatever it is, 7 verses, we're going to get this cry for help in verse 55. I called in your name, O Lord. We have a lament, a complaint against God in 43 to 45. You have covered yourself from us. Complain against enemies. right over here, 46, 53, 62. Enemies have opened up their mouths. How many times has he complained about enemies now? Confession of trust. We've been missing these for a while. You drew near when I called. And we're really going to hone in on those verses. I think they're spectacular. Petitions. You will recompense them. The confession of sin. We have transgressed and rebelled. So good. He's continuing to do that. Assurance of being heard. Another one we haven't seen for a while. You have heard my voice. And then a wish or petition for God's intervention. Hey, judge my case. And that's another one that we're going to focus in on a little bit later. So all of these components are coming in here.
So the complaint, I find it interesting. The complaint against the enemies in this section is basically that it's not that they burned my house down or that they, you know, beat my kids up or something like this. They're talking bad about me.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's the one, they've silenced me in the pit in a place to start. I don't think that's literal. I think it's just, they won't let me talk. They won't let me defend myself. They won't let me say what's right. Just, no, shut up. You know what I mean? They're just being mean to him.
Yeah.
It's not big. It's not a grand scale of persecution. It's just, but it's the kind of thing that we all face every day, right?
Yeah.
One way or another. Somebody's mean to me.
Right.
How do I respond to that?
Right. It's a weight, you know.
It is, but the point is, like, we think it's easy to think of laments as being about big, important things like the destruction of a city or a country or something like that. It says they're whispering about me,
right?
And that bothers me.
Yeah,
and he laments about that.
It's good to bring that out. Yeah, good. Okay, let's get into the text here. So remember, we just finished with this section about hope. You know, where Jeremiah, he's remembering who God is, what is good. And then verse 40, which I think is a real high point here. Let us test and examine our ways and return to the Lord. Let us lift up our hearts and hands to God in heaven. We have transgressed and rebelled, and you have not forgiven. You know, you see how this is a turn from not just acknowledging God, which is good in itself, but to moving into action. You know, what is a lament? What is wisdom? What is Christianity without action, you know, without doing something? A lament should cause change, internally or externally, or both. You know, we've called it a way of processing, you know, what you think and feel. You know, well, when you process that, it should elicit a response, right? You know, I understand what happened a little bit better now, therefore I'm not as angry, or I remember some characteristics of God I was forgetting, therefore my patience has increased, or I have found my actions justified, you know, and therefore I'm going to seek more answers, or I'm unjustified and I need to make changes in my life. Christianity is action. We don't just know what God told us, we live it, hopefully. That's what we're trying to do. So I love this call to action here. So what I want to do is, we have these kind of terms in here. Let us test and examine our ways and return to the Lord. Verse 40. I want us to talk about this for a minute. Because how many times have we read this sort of thing? Hey, just do it. This is what you need to do. Examine yourself. All right? And then we go home and it's like, how do you do that? I don't know how to read anything about myself. I've told y'all before, standing up here, like, I used to have two emotions. Good and fine. It wasn't even, like, bad. I was just like, fine, fine. And, like, that's all I could express. But, like, I need to know, how do I examine my ways? How do I test those ways? How do I actually physically or spiritually return to the Lord? So I want y'all to kind of turn around and talk about that for a minute. Think practically about this. And of course, you may come up with scripture and verses that are going to be helpful to this. And please bring those out as well. But also think very practically about this, okay? So, you know, little groups, whoever's just right around you, let's take, you know, 4 minutes or so. And think through these three separate questions. How do you examine, like kind of fact-finding? How do you test? That's kind of more of the action part. And then how do you return to the Lord? We'll talk about that, okay? 4 minutes.
I'm going to say, look at the individual, how they don't know, and
whatever. Usually, as with some of the elders, always sitting down, probably the six at my own. That's all we're
That might go to the parallel, but that seems to be the reason for each
First, you're looking at it, and then you start probing it. There's something in our mistakes. You know what I mean? You open up the battery case for acid. You look at the mechanism and see if there are gears missing. You know what I mean? So you test it a little. You apply a big stricter standard. And one of those tests is, what do you think about this? You know, how does this look to you?
After
that, if you're out of step, this thing is out of step with the Lord. I think those two rituals are we have transgressed realization of those spells. We have
He's operating from a set of promises that he got to make. Disobey, I'm going to come and destroy your cities and take you out of the land. And then they see that happening. They're like, okay, well,
one more minute.
Just, and it's a little bit harder for us to know that. But I think when we suffer, God is always looking at something and says, what's true right now?
I was just wondering, this 39 still belong? I put it on the first half, but it seemed like a whole half belonged on the second half.
It depends on the outline you write. I can give you a little explanation. I don't think there's a hard transition for me to get at this point. But it's basically that it says, okay, look, I'm going to trust in God. I know He's faithful. I know there's a that's because I drew the line so I know where to stop and what to do about it. I know there's a standard, right? He does not get to crush the thunder's
feet. All right, let's all come back together and start sharing what we came up with. And we'll start with this first one, examine our ways. What did y'all come up with here? Practically, how do we do that? How do we examine ourselves and our ways?
Well, when you take an exam, you put down what you've learned from labs and books. So we examine our ways, and if God is over here and we're over here, then something's wrong.
Right. Is that Deuteronomy 13, I think, the test, you know, like you examine a prophet, and if what he says comes true, he's a prophet. If he doesn't, you know, he's not. So examine it, putting it against something. Good.
I'll put that kind of in our second question there.
Uh-huh.
But this first one, I almost think of forensics. Mm-hmm. You know, under an investigation, a homicide, mm-hmm. for example, you've got these scientists that come in, and they're picking through the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
The crime scene like crazy, and they're looking at all kinds of detail, trying to gain as much information as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, when we are in a state of chaos or confusion, and we basically have a crime scene in front of us with the way that we've wrecked our lives, whether it's an event or a series of events, we really need to look in a forensic way of looking and enumerating, you know, listing out the facts of where we're at to separate the confusion an emotion of our situation with the reality of our situation. And I think that's why we write out these laments and we write out these facts about how we feel and what we're seeing and what we're looking at. And so we carefully examine what is actually right in front of us.
Right.
And that grounds us and it gives us a foundation to work from.
Yeah, sometimes you have to ask really hard questions at that point, right? When you're examining the evidence. I do my best thinking in the shower. I'm just like sitting there and I'll be like, man, what happened earlier? Like, I should have said this and this and I could have thought through this and like, and then I'm like, oh, I said that wrong, you know, like, you really have to examine yourself and think through, like, what was I doing? Why did I do that? What drove that? Okay.
To both your points and what Danny said about forensics, this examining our ways reminded me of Ephesians 5:15. Look carefully then how you walk. And then he goes on about redeeming the time. But we can get so caught up in just the flow of life where we're not really thinking about God and remembering who we are in relation to God and just allowing things just to just suck up our time and to where we're not really doing the good godly things that he wants us to have that relationship with, taking the time to pray like to see these lamenters praying so deeply and reserving that time quiet and all that. And I've been thinking about that even back to our Ephesians class, which is the last segment, about this passage. And there's talking about practical things, there's actually apps or you can journal. You start literally forensic science your time that you spend, and you can track like what your typical day looks like, and then you can look back and think, wow, I spent 17 hours on YouTube this week, you know. And you can find those things that, and then you can like literally just see where you're going with your life instead of just being brought along by the momentum of all these things that are thrown at us every day.
I mean, there's something about it, when YouTube, though, if I just saw that on page, I'd be like, man, what are you doing this week? Like, did you get any work done? And, like, once you notice it that way, it really does bring you to the forefront. I like the practicality of that. There's a lot of things like that. There's apps, there's podcasts, there's books that you can read. There's a lot of ways that you can kind of examine yourself in ways that you can't on your own. You know, there's therapy out there. You can talk to somebody. They're going to ask you questions. And they're going to make you think through, you know, what you're going through in the process.
So, like, examining the words, I was thinking about the Berean and the Acts, where they received the word with eagerness, and they examined the scriptures daily to see if the things that they were told were actually true.
Right. And they had to do that thing, right? This is a brand new concept, this church that has been established. And, like, when better to really think through, okay, what drove this? What do I need to do then? A transition point here. When you're at your lowest, you're lamenting. Like, I need to think through, where do I need to go from here? That's a really good example.
Let's try to get these other two, test our ways. This is more of the action part. Did y'all come up with anything separate here? I know these were, they kind of blend together a little bit.
James mentioned asking someone else to evaluate you.
Mm-hmm. I think that's spectacular. I mean, if you ask for honest feedback from somebody, hey, what do you think about this thing or this situation? Like, I'm going to take that very, it's kind of a task you've just given somebody, because I'm going to try to evaluate, you know, rightly. We did that with some of the classes, like when somebody new teaches, you know, you need to give them feedback. And it can't just be like, ah, man, it's awesome. You know, just, they probably did a great job, but you need to kind of think through, hey, you may should have done this a little bit better, or you could grow in this way, and like help them see the things that maybe they can't. I'm seeing hands everywhere. Good.
Yeah, just I'll be brief. You know, when we test, we're making a comparison to something else.
Yeah.
And what we need to do is look to the Lord as our example.
Yeah.
We look to what He says. Mm-hmm. We look to what He did in the gospel accounts.
Yeah.
That's how we compare ourselves and see if our ways are in fact the ways of the Lord.
Yeah, I think that's the key. Good, Oscar.
Proverbs 27:17 says, "Lightning sharpens diamonds, one minus focus mode. So what I think is that every time that we share time with faithful Christians, in rooms or when we have short relationships with one another, that we keep people open, that always we go to the scriptures. That, I think that's the way that chart for to correct the ways.
Yeah, that's the way you test yourselves, and that's the people around you. They're helping you, you know, learn something about yourself. I thought, make a plan on what you want to do. Nothing will poke holes in what you're trying to do than actually making the plan, like having to think through whatever it is you're trying to change. And then, this may seem obvious, actually try what someone suggests. When somebody tells you something like, hey, you need to make this change, you're like, what? Give it a try. Maybe they're right, you know, or at least you'll learn something about it. So give it a try. We're going to get cut off, but return to the Lord. Maybe I'll just say a couple here. The key word here is Lord. I thought that was important, not church. Jeremiah didn't say, man, everybody just needs to get back to temple. You know, our goal is not to get people back to church. It's to get back to the Lord. We can do that through getting support. You know, I think that the church actually is the best way to do that, but that's not the goal. It's the Lord in front of all that. And the church is a vehicle to get there. Surrounding yourself with other people, seeking God, that's a way to return yourself. In this context, returning suggests you used to be where you needed to be. So recall that time. What were you doing different? You know, what about, like, the best time in your life? You know, what made it that way? What were you doing there? I remember I was going to a lot of Bible studies. You know, I was spending a lot of time with this certain person. You know, like, remember those things and just be ready to make those big, radical changes. Those are okay. You can disrupt your life by making big changes, especially when they serve a really important purpose. All right, so we'll finish this out, and then we'll go through chapter 4 on our next class. All right?